Hello, friends, and welcome once again to the Foundry Church podcast. My name is Joseph. I'm the worship pastor here at the Foundry Church in Winter Springs, Florida. We started a new series this week called How It All Works that is sort of built off this idea found in Romans chapter 1, verse 20, that says this, "Ever since the creation of the world, God's eternal power and divine nature, invisible though they are, have been understood and seen through the things he has made." When we look at creation, we don't see very many straight lines. We don't see very many perfect ratios of acorns dropped to trees grown. What we see is much slower, more winding processes. There are no straight rivers on the planet. There are straight canals that we have built because we seem to value efficiency and effectiveness and return on investment and that sort of thing. But what God seems to value, based on what we see in nature, is the process, maybe more so than the destination. So that's what this four-week series is going to be about. We hope you enjoy it, and we hope that you enjoy this message from our lead pastor, Seth Cain.
Welcome. I'm so very glad you're here, whether you're joining us in person or online. My name is Seth, and this is The Foundry, where we're all about a better you and a better world. Real quick, I do want to just mention that I hope you will continue to be praying over all of God's children and all of the conflict and everything that's happening in Israel as this thing continues to unfold. It will continue to weigh heavy on my heart and mind, and I assume everybody else's. So we're not neglecting that or ignoring that. We addressed a lot of that last week, but we are attempting to move forward. So keep that in your prayers and trust that God will be working through that. So we begin a new series this week. Actually, before we get to that, I do want to show you something that's really cool. I got a gift this week from a really great family. They got me a new mug for stage to drink out of. But it says something on this side. It says, "Be careful or you might end up in my next sermon," which I thought was pretty great. So thank you to the Leskoskis. I'm going to face it out. So we begin our new series that we're calling How It All Works, which is essentially going to be a discussion geared towards reframing how we think about things like fear and failure when it comes to our lives. In Romans 1, it says this, since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. Being clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. So Paul says there's something about the world that we live in, something about the universe that we live in that speaks to who God is and what God is like. Something about creation speaks to something about God. So here's my question. Here's what we're going to start with. If you had no knowledge of the Bible, if you had no knowledge of the Bible whatsoever, and you had to describe what God was like based only on your observation of creation, how would you describe the nature of God, what God is like, and how God functions? How would your observation of how creation works, of how it all works, inform your understanding of God? How would your observation of how it all works inform your understanding of life? Now, I get that's a lot like to sort through, especially when you're put on the spot. You'd be like, oh, I need to think about that. Take some time this week, wrestle through that, think through that. Okay, so in order to help us, though, with thinking through this, I want to give a few examples here. And so we're going to come over here to this, and I promise this won't be like the painting last week. This will be a lot simpler and less involved, hopefully better. So picture in your mind, if you would, like a large tree. Maybe it's an oak tree. Let's say it's an oak tree. I'm not going to get real detailed here. We're going to go with this. I mean, this is basically an oak, if you think about it. But we have our tree here. How does, like, a tree in general, plants, that sort of thing work? How does an oak tree work? Well, they drop a bunch of seeds. In our particular instance, you would have, like, an acorn for the oak tree. Yes, it's not to scale. I'm aware of that. But it drops an acorn, drops a bunch of acorns, and then hopefully one of those acorns will sprout into a little seed, a little tree, and then it will grow. I know, it's awesome, isn't it? So the average oak tree produces, like, they say, like 2,000 acorns a year. Somebody counts. I don't know how they do that. But every year, they don't fully fill themselves up. Every 2 to 5 years, they have what's called a mast year. And in a mast year, the oak tree fully, I'm not going to do all the acorns here, but they fully fill up. And they, a large oak tree can produce something like 10,000 acorns in a single year. Doesn't do it every year, every 2 to 5 years. So an oak tree can produce 10,000 acorns in a mast year. Now, what scientists, somebody figured out along the way is that it takes roughly, it's only one out of every 10,000 acorns that drops that actually produces a new tree. Isn't that crazy? One out of 10, that looks like a flower, we're going to pretend it's an oak. Or one out of 10,000 seeds that drops produces a tree. That's like not very good odds. All right, okay, so that's the oak tree. So now let's take another example. Let's think about, if you were to think about like a river or something, okay? Can this go here? Sure, perfect. If you were to picture a river, what would you picture? A stream, a brook, something? What's in your mind? Is it something that's like a long, straight sort of body of water? Or would it be something that kind of was more like this, had a little meandering, some bends and winds to the river? Probably be something more like this, wouldn't it, right? Well, think about how a river works. Well, because of like the flow of the river and then like different levels of different seasons and all this stuff, you have like this water flow that comes and it starts to erode certain areas, so this area will get bigger, and then that will carry the sediment to this side, and this side will fill in, and like it will just continually be bending and shaping. Now, actually, I saw this really cool time-lapse video this week of, there was a river, I think it was in Asia somewhere. It's like over a 30-year period of satellite images, and you can see how the river actually changes shapes like over the course of 30 years, and it's pretty drastic, it's pretty wild. But this is how it works. Because of the flow of the river, gravity, erosion, all the things, you will never really find like a river that is straight, will you? It's just not how it works. Okay, so now we've got trees, and we've got rivers. I'm sure this is good for the TV. Okay, so now let's picture human reproduction. Okay, don't picture that. But how, when we start talking about human reproduction, if we go back to like the uncomfortable, you know, health class, middle school talk, how the body works, sex talk, all this stuff, you learn a few things along the way. And we know, like, how does that work, right? There's typically, the way it works is the female produces, an egg, and then the guy, his job is to fertilize it, and he does that through some things, and then babies are born, something like that. Now, I did just watch a documentary on this. It was actually really great. You should check it out sometime. But it was like, what if we turned the sperm cells into life, into human-sized things? Like, what would that journey look like? It's fascinating. Anyways, so what they said was that the male produces, I think, something like 1,000 sperm cells per every like heartbeat. That's a lot. So by the time when things begin to happen with mom and dad or whatever, when the male begins to send his boys into action, you're talking about, I'm trying to be, we could just talk about it, right? We're primarily adults here, not in our spirits, maybe. So you're looking at, when that act occurs, you're looking at a force of like, they say like 300 million sperm cells on average. 300 million sperm cells. It's absolutely crazy. Now, what they said in this documentary was when they go into action, when the army invades, they don't ever like really, I'm drawing this. They don't really like go straight. They don't. It's like they're all over the place, and there's 300 million of them. Like it's a wild sort of thing. And of the 300 million, as we know, like usually it's just kind of one that makes it. Actually, they said if you were to take the size of the sperm cells and scale them up to the size of a salmon, it's a weird image, I know. But the journey that salmon would make would be a 40-mile swim upstream. That's pretty incredible. Like these guys are doing a lot of work, right? And not only that, but when you look at how the female body works, as far as I'm told, because I don't have one, but the egg, when it's released, you know, every month, it's only viable for like this very small window, right? It's like 12 to 24 hours that it's even viable. So the chances of this thing actually happening and then only one of the 300 million actually making it within the time window, that's like, it's kind of a miracle in and of itself that any of us are even here to begin with, right? I mean, it's pretty wild that that's how we all kind of got here. This is like not good odds. This is worse than the oak tree odds if we start thinking about it. Right? Now here's my question. Going back to our original question, is when we're talking about God and how God works and God's being seen from what has been made, if we were to look at these things from creation, like how do we describe how God works, what God is like, based on our observation of creation, how are we to understand God? Whether we're talking about the oak and the acorns, whether we're talking about the river and how it moves water, whether we're talking about human reproduction, how would we describe how God works or how God views things? It's kind of interesting because this, like from our perspective, doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, right? If we were to look at these examples and just pull out a few concepts or ideas. When you're talking about the oak tree, one out of 10,000 acorns to produce one thing, that's like very wasteful. It's a lot of effort and a lot of resources, and that's a terrible ROI. That's a 0.01% return on your investment. That's not good odds. I would not invest in the oak tree. When we're talking about the rivers, the way that they bend and wind, like they're not very efficient, are they? In fact, the longest river in Florida is the St. John's River. I'm sure you knew that. St. John's River starts in Blue Cypress Lake, I believe, just east of Vero Beach. Now, it works and it's winds its ways up the coast. It kind of comes in around us, around the Orlando area, and then it starts to make its way back out to like Jacksonville to empties into the Atlantic. Now, the St. John's River, it is approximately, they say, 310 miles long from the lake where it starts to getting to the Atlantic in Jacksonville. Okay, 310 miles. Now, if you were to drive from Vero to Jacksonville, what would you do? You'd hop on 95, which is a fairly long straight road, and then you'd head right up the coast. That trip would take you 215 miles. So when we look at what nature is doing compared to like what we might do, it seems a bit ridiculous. It's a difference of almost 100 miles. It's a 100-mile difference between the man-made version of getting from point A to point B and nature's version of getting from point A to point B. It just doesn't seem very efficient, does it? Like, why are you wasting all this time and effort and energy? Like, there's a better way to transport this water. What do we see with the human reproduction? One egg per month, only viable for this tiny window of time, then 300 million chances to make something happen, and only one of those becomes successful. And not only that, but if you look at the overall process of like creating human beings, you're talking about a process of like 9 to 10 months to produce this child, and you're looking at a production rate of only like one offspring a year. There's a lot of waste on the front end of this process, and you have extremely limited production. You can't go more than that, really. Like, it just doesn't work. So a couple things about all this. My guess is, and I could be wrong here, but my guess is that you've never looked at an oak tree and seen all the acorns on the ground and went, what a stupid oak tree. What a waste of time and effort. What's it doing with its life? You dumb oak tree. My guess is you've never looked at a river and thought, gosh, you are such a waste of effort and energy. You are so inefficient. What are you doing? You could have been there like in 215 instead of 310 miles. Like, why would you even do that? My guess is you've never looked at like your reproductive stuffs and said like, what are you doing? Well, you may have said that, but different reasons. But like in this particular situation, like, You're being wasteful. You're being inefficient. You've never said that to our reproductive systems. You see, it's like typically we have a complete lack of judgment towards the things of nature, the things of creation. And yet nature seems to be wildly inefficient and extremely wasteful. Creation seems to waste on a massive scale, and yet we are not bothered by this whatsoever. We just go, yeah. Well, that's how it works. We just accept that that is how creation functions. And so it's like this whole quote-unquote waste and inefficiency, it's just so prevalent throughout all of creation, it seems to be more of a feature than a flaw. It's almost like it's not a waste as much as it is an abundance of attempts. It's almost like it's not inefficient. It's like there's just, it's like radical plenty. Right? Maybe we need new language with a few things. So when we compare how creation seems to work with how we as humans seems to work, there seems to be a bit of a difference. Like if you were to think about man-made structures, how we do things, how we operate, what do we see? Whether we're talking about buildings, streets, city planning, farming, whatever, what do we see? We see a lot of long straight rows, don't we? We build our houses in nice little squares and they've got nice corners. And then we build our streets and our cities a lot of times in like grids. When we talk about farming and planting, what do we see? We do long straight rows. If you drive through an orange grove, what do you see? Row after row after row of these orange trees, perfectly planted, all evenly spaced. It's all to maximize efficiency. What about when we like build canals to transport water? What do? Long straight rows, because we want to get there as quickly as possible. We want to maximize our efficiency and our effort. So when we compare the two, when we compare how creation works to how we seem to often work, there's a difference. And nature seems like, nature doesn't really do like straight lines, if you've noticed, right? And yes, obviously I'm aware there's going to be exceptions to the rule, and I get that. We're speaking generalities. So here's another question, okay? So would you rather? If you were going to go hiking through the woods, would you rather that hike, that trail that you're on, be a straight shot, point A to point B, like the power lines run? Would you rather walk the power lines through the woods, or would you rather walk the trail that has some winds and some curves and weaves your way through the forest? My guess is you'd like the winding trail. Okay, another would you rather. Would you rather sit next to a long, straight, man-made human canal and watch the water pass by you, or would you rather sit next to the edge of a river? Which one seems more peaceful? Which one do you like feel more vibe? Which one stirs something in you? My guess is the preference would be the actual river, right? Like that would be my preference as well. There's just something about that that speaks to us. So again, if you were going to describe how it all works based on your observation of nature and creation, what would we say? If we were going to describe what God is like based on what we see in creation, and what would our understanding of God be like? Because from our perspective, nature seems to be a bit wasteful. It seems to be a bit inefficient and not concerned at all for like time management or maximizing production. And yet, this is the very same creation that we say we believe in, that we believe that God created in the very beginning. This is the same creation that God blessed and called it good and was very pleased with. And so kind of makes you wonder, like, if God is okay with what God created, if God is pleased with God created and how it all works, maybe we would do well to like rethink our understanding of how we operate when it comes to things like production and efficiency and how we use our time. Maybe we need to do some reframing of how our lives and how our lives work, how we operate, what it means to be successful. Maybe we need a different language. Maybe we need different goals. Maybe we need a bit of a different perspective. You see, creation is not enslaved to our understanding of efficiency and production. So it seems we might do well to better align ourselves with how it all works and how God created it all to work. Now, when we talk about creation, we also have to talk about time, which gets a little weird, but we'll try to keep this as simple as possible. So much of how we think about ourselves is often related to our understanding of things like production and efficiency and achieving and what kind of goals we can set and accomplish. This is also kind of connected to how we understand how we use our time. Okay, so if you've ever had the thought like, well, I should be farther ahead than I am now at this point in my life. Or maybe you thought, I've missed my chance, or, you know, I spent all these years doing X when I should have been doing Y, and or I need to hurry up and get this thing or that thing done because time is running out. If you've ever had those types of thoughts, and I think we all have at some time, these thoughts, the result of these thoughts is that we end up carrying a lot of anxiety, or we carry with us a lot of insecurity about what we have or haven't done. And maybe we even carry with us this idea that, I failed, or I haven't measured up to what I should be. Like, you know, when I was 20, I figured by the time I was 40, I'd have it all figured out. And then you get to 40 and go beyond that, and you're like, oh, I feel like maybe I need another few more decades, and I might start to get close. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't feel like, I should know more. I feel like I should know more than I do. I feel like I have more questions now at 40 than I did when I was 20. Like, what have I been doing with my life? What am I doing? Okay, so let's say if you were going to draw a timeline of your life. Okay, how would you draw a timeline of your life? Well, obviously it's a timeline, so we would just kind of naturally assume like this, right? And we would go, okay, I was born here, and then I graduated here, I got this job there, then I had some kids, got married, that sort of thing. And then we just kind of proceed, and, you know, we look at that, and we're like, yeah, that's the order of the events of my life. That's how things have gone, like, for me. It would be like this kind of nice, it's a nice, straight, clean line, kind of, like if you were just to lay it out. But here's my question. Is this how your life has felt? Like a nice, straight, clean line? Well, this may be like factually accurate. Yeah, those are the right things that they're, I guess, but does that portray how your life journey has felt? My guess is probably not. So when we talk about time, time is this thing that we've constructed in order to help us make sense and give order to the events of our lives and how things have happened. But what is the construct and concept of time? What is that all based on? Well, when we think about a day, what is a day? Okay, a day is, you know, 24 hours, but the day is based on like the rotation of the earth. This is a circling arrow, in case you weren't aware. In relation to the sun, right? How long it spins around there. We know that that's how that works. Okay, so it's based on the rotation of the earth in relationship to the sun. Okay, so what is a year? A year is the orbit, the circling of the earth, the sun around the earth in relation to the sun. Still with me? Yes, we get it. That's how time works. That's how we tell time. That's how we number our days, I guess. But if you look at it, what are these things? This thing that we call time is really, it's really just based on this relationship of movements. It's a relationship of movements between two different things. And so time itself is not really a thing. Time is just how we name these relationships of movements, the rotations and the orbits and that sort of thing. And that gives us the ability to say, well, here's what the timeline looks like. So if this is the timeline of our life, the top line, the top straight line there, how would you draw what your life has felt like? If this is the accurate depiction of how things have happened, how would you draw what your life has felt like? If it was me, and I'm sure this maybe isn't just me, but maybe my timeline of life would be like something like this. That to me feels more accurate, like how my life has gone. Like, the nice straight line is awesome, but like that's just not how it feels. So while the timeline on top, the nice straight line, may be accurate, I would say that one is a better description of how the whole thing has felt to me. Now, when you compare the two lines, which one is more visually interesting? The top straight line or the one that bends and curves and has overlaps and intersections? And yeah, that one, the bottom one is way more interesting, isn't it? It's all of these curves and bends in the river of my life that actually makes it more interesting. It's all those bends and curves and backtracks and overlaps that have served to make me, to make you who we are. It's the bends in the river of our lives, of what we call our lives, that make it like more interesting, that allow us to learn and to grow. When we compare the two images there, the top timeline and how it felt timeline, one is straight and it's efficient and it's direct. The other one seems to be a bit aimless and a bit wandering. Now, while you may occasionally have the thought like, man, I feel like I've wasted like this part of my life or whatever, your life is always a series of related events, a series of experiences in relationship to one another. So when we talk about time and we have the thought like, oh, it's too late, or it's going to take too long, or we need to go faster, or we've only got this one shot, or I've only got this one moment, these are all like self-fabricated judgments. They're all judgments that we're making decisions ahead of time about how things should go or how long we think they should take based on our own pre-established expectations. But the reality is if what we call time is based on a relationship of movements, this is how we understand time, a relationship of movements, then this, that is my life, this is all a relationship of movement. Everything that I've experienced is in relation to everything else. And if everything I've experienced is in relation to everything else, then that's what it took to get me to where I am. Which means, like, maybe it didn't take too long. Which is to say, like, I'm not behind. And maybe that time wasn't wasted. This is just how long it took me to get to where I needed to be. It took that relationship of movements to help me to get to where I am. Yeah? Maybe? I think it kind of makes sense. When we start to see how it all works through the observation of creation, we see that creation understands time through the lens of abundance. Things take as long as they take. How long did it take to form the Grand Canyon? A really long time. And the result is something absolutely beautiful. Would you judge the Grand Canyon for not taking shape quicker? You should have eroded more fastly things. That's a weird thought. But when we're in sync with how it all works according to nature and creation and how God established it all to function, maybe it helps us to start to shift our process from thinking, oh, this is taking too long, to just thinking, well, this is how long it takes. It's only our own arbitrary time constraints that burden us with how good or bad we think we are doing. Because nothing else in creation really seems to work this way. A tree isn't worried about how long it takes to grow. A river isn't running a race. The planets don't judge their duration of their orbits. Oh man, it took me 365 days last year to get around the sun. I bet I could do it in 362 this time. No, wouldn't that be ridiculous if our years, if the Earth was trying to best itself, set a PR, or be like, wow, wouldn't that have been great in 2020? And be like, man, if it could do it in like 250 this time, that would be great. We get to zip right through 2020. Anyways, they're not worried. It takes as long as it takes. That's what we see in nature. In 2001, I graduated from Johnson Bible College, and I spent 3 months in Mozambique, Africa, doing missions work. Spent 3 months there, and while I was there, I bought myself a gift. I bought myself a couple things. I bought a guitar, I bought some bow and arrows, and I bought this pen. I know you probably won't be able to see it too long, good online, but it's a pen. It's carved out of bone, they told me, but it's got this lady on it, and she's got like a bird on her head. She's just hanging out. But the reason I bought this pen was because at the age of 21, 22, whatever it was, I knew that I wanted to, at some point, write a book. I knew I wanted to write a book at 22 years old. I'm like, okay, so I got this pen, and obviously, we have computers. I'm not going to write. I'm going to get a quill and hand pen a book. But I got this just as like to take notes and like just like as a reminder that this is something I want to do. And so since I've bought this, obviously I've had it with me ever since. It's traveled with me everywhere we've moved, everything I've been through all my life. I've continued to hold on to this pen. I've carried it around with me for the past 22 years of my life. Now, 3 years ago, I started working on a book. It took me 2 years to kind of get through it. Last November, I self-published it, and it's been floating around in the world for like a year or so now, and I'm very proud of that. Very proud of that. But listen, it took me 19 years 19 years to go from buying this pen and setting the goal for myself to actually begin to start the thing that I wanted to do. And then by the time I got it done, it was 22 years. 22 years from actually buying my pen, setting my goal, to actually accomplishing the thing that I wanted to do. On one hand, you could very easily go like, dude, what have you been doing with your life? We're all wondering this now. Like, what's wrong with you? Why have you wasted so much time? You could have written a dozen books by now. You may even consider it a bit of a failure. What's taking so long? But on the other hand, maybe the time, all that time, was exactly what I needed to grow and to learn and to wrestle and to struggle through some things in order to have something that was worth writing, to create something that was of value. And how, when we observe how creation functions, how the rivers bend and wind and flows, and how time is just this relationship of movements, you could say all that time on that journey is the very thing I needed. You could say that it took as long as it took. And so rather than being frustrated or disappointed with myself because things didn't happen on some sort of perfect arbitrary timeline, I'm actually quite proud of myself. And I believe that the bends and the curves of the river of my life actually helped me to create something more beautiful. You see, when it comes to creation and to time, things take as long as they take. This is how it all seems to work. Now, here's the thing. When you look at the larger narrative of the Bible, you see the way that the God of the Bible tends to operate actually kind of parallels with what we observe in God's creation. We see the concepts of like the abundance of attempts, this radical plenty. We see the winding and bending of, and the curving rivers of the people's lives throughout the stories. It takes as long as it takes. When you look at the timeline of and the history of the Hebrew people that were enslaved in Egypt, from the time that they cry out and God rescues them to the time that Jesus shows up and sacrifices himself and dies on the cross and is resurrected to new life, you're talking about a time period of like 1,400, 1,600 years, depending on who you ask. From the time they're rescued from Egypt, they wander through the desert, they spend some time in the promised land, they establish a kingdom, they have that kingdom taken away from them, they return to the kingdom, and they have that taken away. Like, their story was never a straight line. The story has a lot of bends and curves to it. There was this abundance of attempts as God is trying to get them to fall in line with his plans. What you see in the Bible is there's a whole lot of waiting. There's a whole lot of not yets. There's a whole lot of meandering. It seems to be that whether we're talking about the Bible or creation, this is kind of how it all works. I mean, even if you were to look at the story of like Moses and the Exodus, like more specifically, right? We see the same things. And this is obviously one of the most direct parallels you could have here when we talk about the journey through the wilderness. Now, near the end of the book of Deuteronomy, Moses is about to die. The people are getting close to entering the promised land, they think. And so Moses calls the people together to renew their covenant to the Lord. Deuteronomy chapter 29. Moses summoned all the Israelites and said to them, "Your eyes have seen all that the Lord did in Egypt to Pharaoh, to all his officials, and to all his land. With your own eyes you saw those great trials, those signs and great wonders, but to this day the Lord has not given you a mind that understands, or eyes that see, or ears that hear. Yet, the Lord says, during the 40 years that I led you through the wilderness, your clothes did not wear out, nor did the sandals on your feet. You ate no bread and drank no wine or other fermented drink. I did this so that you might know that I am the Lord your God." So God says, I led you through the desert for 40 years. I provided for you all along the way. And the reason I did this is so that you would come to trust that I am God, to trust me, to trust that I will provide and take care of you. Now, I don't know how much you've ever paid attention to this, probably maybe some more than others, but if you've ever looked at the journey that they took through the wilderness, have you ever looked at this? Can we pull up this map right here? Now, there's various maps, various versions of their journey, but can we zoom in, or can we put the whole thing? Yeah, there we go. Yeah, there we go. But now you can't see my finger pointing to it. There we go. Okay, so the red line is the journey. So they start up here in the land of Goshen, they make their way across the Red Sea. There are different, people have different takes on their, based on understanding, it's a whole thing. I chose this one for a reason. So they come down here, to, this is Mount Sinai and Mount Horeb, it says, and then they make their way up here to Kadesh Barnea. They wander around here, they journey back down the Gulf of Aqabah, and then they kind of meander up here, and eventually they get into, like, they go to across the Jordan, and they begin the conquest of the Promised Land. Okay, that's like the trip. Again, there's various you know, kind of nuances to what people understand this, how this works. So a couple things about this. This whole winding trip, 40 years, because of the wandering, it says it took about 1,500 miles is what they traveled, okay? Now, if you look at the very first verses of the book of Deuteronomy, we see something really interesting. The very first verse of Deuteronomy, second verse and second verse, it says this. These are the two words Moses spoke to all Israel in the wilderness east of the Jordan. That is, in Arabah, opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hezeroth, and Dizahab. Okay, verse 2. It takes 11 days to go from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea by the Mount Seir road. Okay, 11 days to go. Okay, so pull up the map here again. Okay, so 11 days to go from here's Horeb, Mount Horeb, here's Kadesh Barnea. 11 days. Now, some scholars estimate that the time it took them to get from the land of Goshen to Mount Horeb was about 6 days. So if that's correct, let's say 6 days to here and then 11 days up to here, that you're looking at like just over 2 weeks. Kadesh Barnea, in case you don't know, is the like, it's like on the border of the promised land. So essentially, they stop there and they're like peering into the promised land. Like they are right at the edge. They're looking into it. They're right there. And this is where Moses sends the 12 spies. Remember this? He sends the 12 tribes, 12 spies. They go spy in the land of Canaan. 10 were bad and 2 were good. What did they see when they got to Canaan? 10 were bad and 10, you know what I'm talking about. So they go, they look, they come back with a report. They say, we can't do it. So God realizes, oh, they're not quite ready yet because they're not quite sure that they can trust me to do this. So within 216 days, they're at the edge of the promised land ready to take it. But because they're not quite ready yet, God says, okay, guess what? We're going to wander for the next 40 years until you're ready. So within 2 weeks, they were right there, ready to go, primed and ready, ready to take the promised land. Now here's the other thing. This may be even harder to see. There's some black dashed lines across here. These are trade routes. If this initial journey took just over two weeks, this would have been much shorter. Yes, it's across the desert. It would have been terrible, but also this would have been much, much shorter. They actually, if they would have just taken this straight path to begin with, could have been there in a handful of days. Could have been here in a handful of days. Real quick, one more thing. If you can see all the blue lines, just for fun, these are all the waterways. And I don't know if you know this, but like we said, none of these rivers are straight because you'll be hard-pressed to find a straight river because that's not how it works. So this dotted line to me, the red, well, all of it really, this to me looks a lot like my journey, how my journey has felt. Right? From our Western American perspective, this journey seems a bit wasteful. It's inefficient. It's taking too long. I mean, if they could have got there in 2 weeks or less, they could have spent those 40 years like actually like cultivating the land and farming and establishing the nation. Like, what a waste of time. The simple truth here is that God doesn't work or think or operate the way we do, thankfully. Right? And really, if you go back to the time of Abraham when God gives the promise, from the time God gives the promise to Abraham to the time they step in the promised land, you're talking about a time frame of like 500 to 700 years. From our perspective, that's a really, really, really long time to receive the fruits of a promise. But God doesn't think or operate or function the way that we might. 2 Peter 3:8 says this, "But do not forget this one thing, dear friends. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day." God has a completely different perspective on time. How long do things take? What does success look like? How things move forward? Even Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 3, "What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. 1,000 years is like a day. A day is like 1,000 years. He has made and will make everything beautiful in its time." For God, 40 years in the desert, it's like, and? And although it may have been not what the people wanted on the journey, maybe it wasn't what they expected on the journey, although Moses may have been frustrated and maybe he even felt like a failure as a leader, God used that time to challenge, to strengthen, to stretch, to grow his people. Let's look at the map again real quick. And so everything they went through all along this long journey, it's crazy to think that maybe even most of that 40 years was kind of spent right in here. All the ups and downs, all the goods and bads, all the times of failure, all the times of success, all the times they had to be, all of that. It took all of that journey to get them to be who God needed them to be. It took all of that journey to get them to the place that they could do the thing that God wanted them to do. Because that's how long it took. That's how long it took. God doesn't play by our rules. God has given us this world. He's given us this creation to give us a better idea and insight into who God is and what God is like and how God operates. And what we see in the Bible that is echoed in creation, in the trees and the rivers and the reproductive systems and time, what we see in creation is this idea of radical plenty, the abundance of attempts, right? Like, based on this acorn thing, like if you were like, hey, Seth, I tried this thing one time and it didn't work. You tried it once, did you? Okay. Maybe come back to me after like the 10,000th time. Like, that's not how anything else works. Oh, I did this, I tried it and it just failed. And? Well, this is taking too long. I just don't. Have you seen how it all works? Because nature seems to be on a different sort of thing. This abundance of attempts. It's like a feature, it's not a flaw. We see radical plenty instead of scarcity in all things. We see it takes as long as it takes because God in creation doesn't think of time the way that we do. When we reframe how we think about things like fear and failure, because based on how it all works, how God created it all to work, I'm not sure that like we need to carry the fear that we do when it comes to life. And I'm not even sure that like failure should really be a part of our vocabulary. Wouldn't that be cool to live with that kind of mindset? No. I'm not failing. I'm just involved in an abundance of attempts. Right? Yeah. Oh, it took you 22 years to write a book. Yeah, but you know, it takes as long as it takes. Like that's. So this is what we're going to be talking about in the next couple weeks. Next week, we have our fifth Sunday. Our kids will be in here, and we're going to take kind of this idea and hopefully expand it a little bit so the kids can appreciate it and hopefully get something out of it. The week after that, we're going to talk about how, because of our understanding of how it all works, we're going to talk about what do we do with fear because of that. The week after that, we're going to talk about because of how it all works, how should we think about things like failure. So I hope that you'll make plans to be here for the next couple weeks. I think it's going to be pretty great. It should be pretty great.
I thank you for that, Seth. Once again, we hope that you enjoyed this message, and we're looking forward to the next 3 weeks of this series as well. Next week's going to be a bit different. It's our fifth Sunday where our kids and students are with us for the entire service. It's also going to be Child Dedication Sunday. I don't know if that part of the service will make it into the podcast or not. And it's also going to be preached by our family life pastor, Hunter Mertz. So we hope that you will join us once again next week for the Foundry Church podcast. Until then, have a great week.